This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
Let's turn our focus to another story that caught our attention. And that was a story born out of a circular from the Department of Health that they will not pay for uninsured walk-ins to private sites, states the circular released in June 2021, according to Business Insider. Now, these individuals are to be referred to public sites. The exception is that private sector sites are authorized to vaccinate uninsured walk-ins aged over 80 years and to reclaim the cost from the state. It is reported that the 80 plus group may not be more than 5% of the site's vaccine allocation. I am joined on the line by the acting chief director of child, youth and school health at the National Department of Health, Dr. Leslie Bamford. Good morning and welcome to Power Talk.
Good morning and good morning to the listeners.
Perhaps, Dr. Bamford, let's just allow you an opportunity to put this circular into perspective.
So this circular aims to provide guidance about what are being called walk-ins.
Mm.
So remember, currently we're in phase two of the vaccine rollout.
Yes.
And we're targeting two groups. We're targeting people over 60 years of age, and we are completing phase 1B healthcare workers.
Mm.
Now, the procedure that we would like people to follow is that they register on the electronic vaccine data system.
Yes.
People who are registered on that system are then allocated to a given an appointment and requested to attend that facility and to be vaccinated.
Yes.
Now, currently, remember, in South Africa, we have the public health sector, which is funded by government, and the private health sector that is funded either normally through cash payments or through payment reimbursement from medical schemes. Vaccination, COVID-19 vaccination, we have committed will be free at the point of service delivery.
Mm.
But the private sector does look to be reimbursed because they have to pay for the vaccine and for administration of the vaccine.
Now,
currently,
yes, go on, Dr. Bamford.
Currently, most people without health insurance are being referred to public sector sites, and people with health insurance, medical aid, are being referred to private sector site.
Does this include those who are on the EVDS system? So does it mean that in the EVDS, you will also be channeled to a vaccine site according to whether or not you are insured?
So that is correct. We have public sector sites and private sector sites. So if you go to a private sector site, their expectation is that they will be reimbursed through someone's medical aid for providing the service which they provide. Going forward, we are in the process of setting up a system whereby people without health insurance will also be referred to private sector sites. And there will be a mechanism whereby the government will reimburse that service provider for the cost of the vaccine as well as the cost of administering the vaccine.
Dr. Bamford, I would like to come in here because this is exactly where I think confusion for me begins. There is a sole entity that procures vaccines, and that's government. And these vaccines, of course, that procurement, the medical aid schemes had come to the party to say they would help to make up part of the cost. But the sole owner of the vaccines is government. So I'm not so sure why it is that private sites would want to be compensated for the vaccine itself.
So while the government procures the vaccine,
Your line, Dr. Bamford, is losing me. Please just move a little. I'll ask my team to just clean up that line to make sure that we can hear each other. But we are having this conversation with the Department of Health on whether or on why it is that they will not be covering uninsured walk-ins at private vaccination sites. I mean, why even the compensation to private sites for the vaccine? The vaccine is bought by government, and Dr. Bamford was just starting to say that while government procures the vaccine. Dr. Bamford, please continue making that point.
So while government procures all the vaccines and imports the vaccines,
yes.
Vaccines provided in the private sector are then sold to the private sector. The private sector then either is reimbursed through the medical aid, or we, as government, have committed that people who are allocated to private sites through the EVDS, government will reimburse the cost of vaccination for those individuals.
Why doesn't it just allocate vaccines that don't have to be bought by the private sector, and those are the ones that get used to those uninsured people?
There are two ways of doing it, and that was considered. However, in terms of the way that vaccines are distributed and controlled and managed, the decision was that it would be more efficient and more in line with normal procedures that that the private sector would purchase the vaccine, but where the vaccine is given to someone who is uninsured, the provider will be credited for that vaccine. So I agree it is a little bit complicated, but the critical issue is that the person is provided with that vaccine free of charge to them.
Well, I suppose when this whole vaccination story started, the idea was that government would be the sole procurer so that there is equitable access to this, but not only just at getting the vaccine, but equitable access in terms of reach. I can imagine Dr. Bamford having to leave a private vaccination site, which is right down the road, and having to go to a public one, maybe some kilometers away. Does this not hamper the rollout process as well?
So currently, we have approximately 400 sites, and the majority of those sites are
Give us that figure again.
Approximately 400 sites are actively actively providing vaccinations.
Mm.
The majority of those are in the public sector. So we certainly agree, once the system is set up, that uninsured people can access or that private providers will be reimbursed for providing vaccinations to uninsured people, then people will be allocated to vaccination sites based on proximity. So that is already happening, that people are allocated to a site that is close to where they live. It's within a kilometer radius in an urban setting, a little bit further in a rural setting. So that's really what we are trying to achieve. We're trying to achieve that we register people, that they are allocated to a site which is close to them, and that they are then vaccinated at that site.
And
if people are registered on the EVDS,
yes,
and allocated in that way, then we know exactly how many people expect can make have adequate vaccination at facilities. The problem arises when we have a high number of walk-ins. So those are people who are not registered,
yes,
or allocated for vaccination on that day. So we understand that there are sometimes people have difficulties registering. We would like to accommodate people who cannot register, but there really are limitations on the number of walk-ins
that you can
that
be able
we
to
can
service.
Accommodate in a facility on a particular day.
I mean, this is not peculiar to the private sites. Even the public sites have, in some instances, turned away walk-ins because it creates an inconvenience in the system, particularly if all your EVDS appointments show up for that particular day. But Dr. Bamford, what is the cost to the state for any individual who is uninsured and receives a jab at a private vaccine site?
So obviously we have to reimburse the provider for the cost of the vaccine. And
what are we looking at there on average per jab?
I don't have the prices in front of me. I'm afraid I'm not quite sure what the costs are. There are several hundred rand per jab, plus the cost of administration, which is about 70 rand.
So at least you are saying that at least you are saying a jab definitely is more than probably what, $10 or $20?
Probably somewhere around there, yes.
Because the reason I'm asking this, Dr. Bamford, I spoke to Dis-Chem 2 weeks ago or so when they announced that they would be part of the rollout and they will be receiving some vaccines and then they will be vaccinating people. When I spoke to Dis-Chem, the impression I got was that Dis-Chem is being given vaccines and then it only charges about, I think they said, 75 rands, an administration cost of those vaccines. Now, this seems to be new news to me, or I am misunderstanding what a private vaccination site is.
So Dis-Chem is purchasing the vaccine. As I say, they then recoup those costs either from a medical scheme, or there will be vaccines for people who are uninsured will be subsidized or by government once that system is in place. That was also a misunderstanding on Dis-Chem's part, and they did later retract the statement.
Yeah.
Because it is very clear that no one may be charged to be vaccinated. So
yes.
Even that 75 rand fee either has to be covered by the
medical they were going to recover it from the state. My guest is Dr. Leslie Bamford. We are talking about the health department circular that said walk-ins of people who are uninsured at private vaccination sites, the government will not cover those costs, which then automatically means those people will be turned away and redirected to public vaccination sites. The line is 0861-987-000. It remains open at all times to you to join in on this conversation. Dr. Bamford, indeed, you are correct. They did say they would have to recover this cost from government. My mind is a bit bamboozled by the idea of government selling vaccines to the private sector rather than working out a funding structure for the vaccine so that everybody would be able to get it, because the first word was that the medical aid schemes were also coming into the party to help subsidize those who are uninsured to ensure that the procurement of the vaccines is not hindered by the lack of funding from government side. But now it seems as if the medical schemes are only coming to the party for their members and nothing and no one else.
So currently, there's no the limitation on vaccines is not related currently to lack of funding for vaccines. The scarcity of vaccines is related to global shortages of vaccines.
No, Dr. Bamford, my question is not on supply. My question is on the funding model that we are using and how the medical aid schemes are part of that funding model. I'm saying from our conversations, it appears something has changed. The medical schemes now are only there for their members rather than helping government ensure that they have the enough pool of resources to buy at an equitable share for everybody.
So medical schemes are contributing in two ways, by purchasing the vaccine from government and then by reimbursing and reimbursing private sector providers vaccinate people who belong to the state.
So they are now purchasing, but only for their members. So they are no longer there for the better good of the society.
So my understanding is that they are also contributing by through the fund that they are purchasing the vaccine. So they are assisting government by purchasing.
Dr. Bramford, I'm losing you again. I'm going to ask my team to try and get that line proper, so that we continue to hear each other. I am not so sure what's happening with the funding models around these vaccines and the place of medical schemes. It's probably something that we need. We need greater transparency, definitely, on how the procurement is happening, who's giving what type of money. I just don't see why, if we were to pull resources together, say, government, buy these vaccines. This is for the better good of the country. I think the medical schemes had said they would take from the non-prescribed benefits of their members, and that's what they would do. But I thought that they would also be ensuring that they subsidize those who are uninsured. Now it seems government procures, government keeps for public facilities, and then government sells to the private sector. What is involved in that transaction? Is there a markup? What's going on? And do we know who is facilitating this exchange? It's really mind-numbing to me. I'll tell you that much at least. 0861-987-000. You've been listening in on the conversation. What is it that you've got to tell us this morning? It is 11:58, and I've got Ndombi on the line. Good morning.
Hi, Lukona. Thank you for taking my call.
Only a pleasure.
I have a quick question to the doctor.
We are still trying to establish a line, but I'll put it to her. So go ahead, Ndombi.
All right, Lukona. My husband got an SMS a night before he was due for vaccination. It came around 10 o'clock, and the site was about 60 kilometers away from where he stays.
Mm.
And I think it was at the beginning when they were sending out SMSs, I think early May.
Yes.
Obviously, he couldn't go. So the question that I have is, how do they deal with those cases?
And I've had some people complaining that it seems the system has no ability to rebook you. Is that part of what you have experienced?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yes, it doesn't.
Ndombi, I hear you loud and clear. Thank you very much. Dr. Bamford, perhaps let me give you an opportunity. If you did hear Ndombi, she's raising an issue. Her husband got an SMS at 10 p.m. the night before his day for inoculation, and the site was 60 kilometers away, and no doubt he couldn't make it. So what happens to those cases? Because some people have been complaining that the EVDS doesn't allow you to rebook or to be reassigned a date if you have missed your appointment.
Okay, so my response would be twofold. So it is true that, unfortunately, in the very first few days of the rollout, the SMSs were received very late. And so people were unable to make the booking. That has been rectified, so now people receive their SMS at least 3 days before their appointment.
Mm.
That's the first thing to say. If people miss their booking, they will be rescheduled. In fact, they will be rescheduled twice. If they miss all three of the appointments, then they will not be rescheduled unless they phone the call center and ask to be re-entered into the queue.
Okay.
If that happens, then they will be scheduled again.
And do you by any chance have that call center or number, just in case somebody's listening in, like Ndombi, who really wants to get this issue fixed and that they get another date?
So I'm embarrassed. I don't know the call center number offhand, but okay. It is the
I'll ask my team to try and get me that call center number for the EVDS so that we can say it out to our listeners for their benefit. What is that?
It's a standard COVID hotline. And
so it's the COVID hotline.
It gives you an option of whether you have COVID-related questions or vaccine-related questions.
Okay. No, that's fantastic. I think this actually helps. But Dr. Bamford, in this vaccine rollout and the involvement of the private sector, I'm still honestly, genuinely confused why government has to sell the vaccines to the private sector rather than procuring the vaccines and probably tallying up later to say this is the number of people who were insured and received, and then we can compensate government as the private sector. Because now this back and forth buying and selling doesn't really make good sense to me at all.
So in fact, that's exactly what we are doing. There is a tallying up system. The issue is that the price is the selling happens up front rather than at the end. So if a provider buys vaccine, they can buy the vaccine on credit, and they will then be credited for the vaccines that they provide to uninsured people.
Yeah, I'm really trying to understand where we are. Who handles this transaction? And are you selling? Is government selling at the price of purchase, or is there a markup? What's happening? Because I mean, this has not really been ventilated with us in the public.
So perhaps you should have a discussion with the people who are directly involved. My role is more on ensuring that people get vaccinated. So our biggest concern is that we have sites up and running, we have vaccinators, we have vaccines in those sites, and that people are registering on the EVDS and are coming into our facilities and getting vaccinated.
And at this stage, are you happy with the EVDS and how it's functioning?
Overall, yes. Clearly, there will always be some teething problems, but we are seeing that people are being allocated to sites. They are getting their SMSs at least 3 days in advance. And so the system really is starting to work and to deliver on what needs to be done.
Okay, given the storage issues around Pfizer, how are we doing in terms of vaccinating in rural areas? Because it was said that the Johnson & Johnson would be a much more easy jab to roll out to rural areas, but we know that there's still that FDA hold on it being released.
So luckily, the storage requirements for the Pfizer vaccine have been relaxed.
Yes.
So initially, Pfizer needed to be stored at minus 70 degrees. That was relaxed some time ago.
And where are we now? And where are we now in terms of storage demands? What is the temperature level?
So Pfizer vaccine has to be stored at minus 20 degrees, which is a freezer. And then importantly, so initially, the Pfizer vaccine, once it was stored, could only be stored in a fridge for 5 days.
Yes.
That has been extended to 30 days.
Okay.
And so that makes Pfizer much easier to use, even in some of the settings where we had considered previously that it would not be suitable.
Okay. And I suppose efficacy levels are continuing to be tested as those dynamics are changed in terms of storage and storage life.
Sorry, I didn't catch that question.
No, I was just saying, I suppose the efficacy levels of the vaccine are continuously being checked given the changing nature of the storage and storage life. That's why these changes are being made.
Absolutely. So we cannot make those changes. They first have to be approved by the manufacturers, usually by the FDA.
Okay.
In the States, and then by SAHPRA.
Dr. Bamford.
So we are very confident that they are still effective.
I'm out of time, but thank you for joining us this morning.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.